sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Ryan is Romney's choice. Six positive days for the S&P and the market trend indicator and key reversal indicator are showing us something. We have lots to talk about today. It is the middle of August 2012. This is episode number 275 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. And we're going to be talking about China. We're going to talk about Twitter. We're going to talk about economics and lots more. Stand by. Here we go. Well, hello, and thanks for joining me. Andrew Horowitz here. And yeah, it is August already, the depths of the summer, where we see very low trading volume on markets. And that means that any little bit of information, whether it's economics or earnings, does move things around a lot. And the fact of the matter is that markets have been moving around a lot on any news. And that's just now a more difficult situation to deal with, because when you have low volume and low liquidity, you see what happens. As a matter of fact, there was an article in the New York Times this weekend that quoted John Bogle as saying something like, he's never seen a market more treacherous as this one. It's in the Sunday business section of the New York Times. You know, when I saw that, and I had to read a little bit more to find out what he was talking about, because you don't usually see John Bogle, who is an advocate of index investing or passive investing, doesn't like the whole active thing, but you don't really see him making market calls or coming out with any kind of discussion about anything more than, hey, just buy and hold. And when I got into the article, it was a pretty long one, I couldn't really find anything that he was saying other than, hey, you know what? We should stay the course. But that's okay. At least he's saying what he thinks is the right thing, if he's not talking his book, that is. We have lots of things happening. We saw the announcement this weekend of Paul Ryan as Romney's running mate as vice president. 42-year-old Paul Ryan, who I thought said he wasn't at all interested in this whole vice president thing not too long ago. But it seems that I guess he is. It makes an interesting discussion, because clearly it blows out the idea that there's going to be any centrist type of economics. We're talking pretty right wing here, and if not Tea Party, well, I'm not sure what you call it. But Paul Ryan has been doing what he can over the last several months and maybe even years to try to restrain government spending, shrink down government, and at the same time try to put a cap on some of the various spending that goes on in all sorts of government assistance programs, etc. He has a budget out there. We don't know what exactly it's all about because, well, we don't get to see that stuff. That stuff is hidden from you and me, isn't it? That stuff, we don't get to see that. We just get to hear how great it is all the time. It's kind of like the Obama health plan when Nancy Pelosi said, you know, just vote on it. You don't need to see. You'll see when it comes after the fact. I don't like to go along with those kind of things. It's very difficult for me to make any decisions when I don't know all the information. And it's kind of the world we're living in right now. It's kind of like, you know, just go with it. Don't worry about it. It's all going to be fine. We'll see what happens. There's going to be a lot of debate coming up. We'll see what kind of dirt, clearly, the Democrats bring up on Ryan. I'd like to see what they have. I mean, I've seen some of his stuff. He seems like a smart guy, and not trying to be political one way or the other, because that's not what we're about here. We're all about markets, economics. We're all about, you know, looking at the information from a point of view where we can make solid decisions. So don't misinterpret this as a political discussion. It's one that we need to have, because we need to understand what's happening. And, you know, what is happening is that the Republicans clearly want to extend the Bush tax cuts. They want to actually make some more tax cuts, it seems. They want to cut down on the spending. They want to reduce the budget deficit. They want to reduce the net outstanding loans or, you know, debt that we have as a country. That's their platform. Now, how do we react to that as investors? That's what we need to talk about, right? That's what we need to think about. So we're going to see kind of what happens here over the next couple of weeks. The Republican convention's coming up. There should be some debates now that will be being talked about and planned. It should be an interesting situation here. I think that, you know, from an overall perspective of what the country needs, yes, we need a dose of reality. We need to cut back on the spending. The problem is, how is that going to hurt? Where is the pain going to come in, and who is the pain going to be for? On one side, you know what? Let's extend everything for everybody. Let's kind of keep kicking the can down the road. And at the same time, on the other side, it's like, hey, you know what? Let's extend for some, not others. Let's not cut back on anybody. Nobody wants to get hurt. Nobody wants to have anything cut. But you know what? You can't have everything these days. We know that as individuals, you know, if you don't have the money to spend, you can't spend it. Well, for very long, at least. We've learned that situation. Well, we've seen six positive days for the S&P 500, actually eking out some gains just at the end. A lot of it is driven by ETFs / futures. And one thing that I've been hearing lately is that, hey, you know what? Volume has been really low, but, you know, maybe volume doesn't matter anymore. Don't listen. Definitely don't listen to that. That's garbage. Volume matters a lot. The amount of, well, we'll call it demand. The amount of indication that buyers or sellers are there is very important. In fact, if you look at a volume chart, you want to see that on up days that are very strong, you have a lot behind it, a lot of firepower. The institutions, we know this, the institutions run the markets. That's fine. No problem there. They have the money. They have the opportunity to put money in or take money out. And how they react will give us the market trend overall. And we also know, we know this, that when you have a market trend in any direction, about 80% of stocks will follow that. There'll be some outliers there. But you know what? You're going to see that most stocks will follow the trend overall. And when you have a trend that has holes in it from a conviction standpoint, when there's not a lot of volume and just things move up and everything moves up or down with it, realize something, that you're setting yourself up for a situation that maybe there's going to be reversals that are going to be painful. Doesn't, I'm not talking about crash. I'm not talking about anything like that. I'm just saying, you know, you're going to see this kind of choppy market condition. Now, we did eclipse the 1400 mark on the S&P and hold it. Came under a few times, but, you know, the buyer stepped in and pushed it above that, and it ended up being a pretty good week overall. Yeah, some stocks got hurt, but overall, it was a generally a good week. It's been a number of weeks that the markets have been up, and that's good. Now, again, we're talking generalities here, but when we look at the market trend, we're clearly in an uptrend right now, and I am... You know, you have to be careful about the definitions here. There's uptrends, and we kind of do the old, hey, what kind of uptrend? Well, we're just in an uptrend right now. It's not weak. It's not strong. It's an uptrend. It is very much, I think, being pushed around in the summertime, being pushed around by central bankers' promises. Because if you look at a lot of the things that have happened over the last week or so, which we'll talk about in a second, China and some of the economics, there really isn't a substantial amount of fundamentals that go underneath what is happening. We've seen earnings come out that have been okay. There are a lot of adjustments lower that we've seen over the last several weeks by analysts. So companies are beating the earnings on EPS, but coming in at or about on revenue. We've seen, for example, last week, an absolutely horrendous number from China on exports. Exports were expected to increase 7% on a year-over-year basis. They increased 1%. Imports were horrible. And that is not what you want to see. The exports to the Eurozone fell off a cliff. And overall, there's a tremendous amount of negativity on an economic standpoint now when it comes to Asia. We're seeing a lot of slowdowns. A lot of countries are guiding down on their GDP, kind of like what a company would do, but from a country standpoint. And at the same time, markets are being held up because the media is coming out on a consistent basis with headlines about, hey, China's economy is so bad. Wow, that's going to be great for stimulus. So what you're having is investors not wanting to, think about this for yourself, they're not wanting to sell out of anything because they believe that some kind of QE, some kind of stimulus, some kind of help from a central bank or a government stimulus plan is going to be implemented, and they're just not willing to sell anything. Now, will that happen? Won't that happen? What's the reaction? Will the stimulus be too much, too little? Will it be questionable? Will it not happen? That's really the big question right now. But the bet is that central banks will continue to come in and do what they can on a regular basis, whether it's by simple talk or whether it's by action, and actually implement a program that is pro-stocks. It's funny because this is something that has been much different than it was just 10 years ago. 10 years ago, 15 years ago, it didn't seem that central banks were so worried about stock markets. But now it seems like they're using that as a gauge of whether or not they're going to have action or not. If they don't react negatively to the economics, well, they don't have to do anything. But how long does that really last? How long can markets actually react positively or in a neutral fashion if economics keep on falling off? Stocks will get repriced. If there's a recession or a downturn in the economics that are consistent, stocks will be priced according to what PE levels should be in those kind of situations. So again, you know, you have a situation that is kind of like clearly a glass half full here. We have an economic environment that is clearly being affected very harshly by the European situation. We know that. We see that there's a lot of stick saves that come in to help out the euro. The dollar is moving all over the place. It's kind of more like a currency game right now. Japan has come out, I don't know, if not once, 100 times, saying that they're going to have aggressive and strong action, and they're watching the yen value and level very carefully. Meanwhile, they don't do anything. Keep on talking about it, but they don't do anything. And the yen is rising again, 78 and a quarter or so. It was 84 recently. When the yen comes down, it's actually rising. It's a reverse. It's against the dollar. So we look at the China exports, and we say, oh, okay, that's negative, and the markets around the world are kind of affected. Our markets are affected on Friday, and then all of a sudden, hey, last half hour, they just bounce right back up. They're down somewhere like 30, 40 basis points on the S&P 500. The Russell didn't do well. The Dow didn't do well, but they did finish up. The Russell was down, but the S&P, the big caps, finished up. Now, why is that? Have you been wondering about why that is? Well, I don't have an exact answer, but I can tell you low volumes create this kind of situation. And more importantly, you know that there's a lot of people that are taking money out of places like Europe and Asia, and they're reallocating it into the U.S., hoping that maybe there's going to be some stimulus, some more QE, something going on towards the end of August as we get ready for Bernanke and the gang to go off on their nice discussion, their summertime favorite place to meet over in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. And the hope is that we'll see a repeat of what we saw a couple of years back where there's a big announcement. Now, my opinion, the QE, the quantitative easing, if they actually go into a program like this once again, and it's not the Operation Twist, but it's an actual buying of bonds again, if you look at actually how much this helped the economy from QE1, QE2, twist to now, and the potential, it's very limited. But yet, the wealth effect, the opportunity to shove money into the economy, or at least shove money into the banks to allow for the wealth effect, stocks to get some momentum from either a psychological boost or from just simply, you know, having a more money available, liquidity available, is very powerful. Now, let's take a look for a second. Let's step back and take a look at what we're seeing in our market trend indicator. Now, we have been looking at a way to view the market in a way, because you see this chop going on. You know, is there a way to view the market where it has been advancing in such a way that's too much, that we get this overheating, or where it's been dropping too much, where we get this oversold situation? You've heard those. You know, I don't really like those phrases. Because, you know, what do they mean? You know, you could see these simply through various things like an RSI, a MACD. But what we wanted to do was come up with a better mousetrap just so we can get a flavor for what's happening on a reversal potential, so you don't get caught and snagged in a market which all of a sudden is moving one direction, snaps the other direction. And if you're short, you got to cover. If you're long and it's moving the wrong way, well, you got to kind of get stopped out, et cetera. Now, we looked at this. Actually, we posted this on Sunday evening early. And if you take a look at that over at thedisciplinedinvestor.com, you'll see that we are a little out of equilibrium right now. A little bit hot, but not so hot that it is like blaringly saying, hey, big reversal going to happen here. Now, meanwhile, the question is, why is that? Because what we've seen is small moves that, you know, 0.5% here or there, maybe 1%, but nothing that has been just so powerful without any kind of a drawdown over the last several days or weeks that has been so horrific that there is this gigantic amount of overheating going on. Now, we are out of equilibrium. That's important. And you have to see where that moves. And if you take a look at these charts and graphs and these gauges, you'll see what we're talking about here. And you'll see the history of these market trend indicators and the key reversal indicator that shows when you get these levels. And these are based on, we've talked about Spearman, we talked about McClellan. There's a lot of things that go into this. It's not just a simple calculation. And we're still testing this. We want to see if, in fact, there is some accuracy, not only going backward, but moving forward. You know, you want to have something reliable to use. So we looked at this, and if you'll see, again, we are at a point right now. So this is, you know, going into Monday morning, August 13th. That's going to be the time that this is, you know, looking back from. And what you're going to see is that we are at, you know, one, if you will, on an overheating. So we're out of equilibrium. We're a plus on the plus side. That means that we could see a little bit of a drawdown coming in, or if we don't, we're going to keep on ticking higher on the overheating chart. If we get to a point that it is so overheated that you see a spike in that, that's when you have to worry. Now, remember something. The oversold indicator here, if you look at the chart, is much more accurate. And why is that? When you look at conditions where things have been desold and just outright thrown out the window, most investors, they go in and they actually are more inclined to buy versus sell or short. So when you look at the indication where something is so oversold, oftentimes you'll find that investors will step in. Now, not always, but when it gets to that level. And again, it's not just because things are down, it's when it's oversold using these metrics. So take a look at that. I think it's very interesting to take a look at. And you have to look at what is the current condition, historical levels. Again, we're not that hot right now, but historical levels and where that's going to go. It would seem that we have to have some digestion here, some consolidation here. Doesn't have to happen tomorrow, the next day, but it has to happen. And it has to happen from an indicator standpoint, not just a down market. Okay, so just take a look at that. We'll have more about that because I really want to keep on refining that. When we get it to a point that it's going to be really refined well, we'll have what we call a market timing model that we'll develop for that. That was something else we'll talk about in the future. One thing I do want you to do is if you go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com, I want to know who is your favorite financial tweeter. Okay? Who is your favorite? List them down for us. We're going to post those next week and give you a decent list of people that you can follow according to our audience. Now, we've gotten in a good amount of people already, but I want to know who is your favorite. And do me a favor, if you do use Twitter, link that and tell other people to give us their recommendations of who is their favorite financial tweeter. Over on the Disciplined Investor, you go right there, and in the middle on the top is the post that's at the top. It says, who is your favorite financial tweeter? It's only going to be open till, I think the survey is open till Wednesday or so this week. So make sure you get that going and put in who that is. Well, let's talk about Europe for a second. Europe is not in good shape. We know that. We see now that Germany, the news is Germany is actually starting to buy, listen to this, Germany is starting to buy Asian currencies. Now, wait a minute. Let's back up here for a second. Germany is buying Asian currencies. Why would they do that? Well, it seems like kind of get out of Dodge to me. They realize that they are over or under-diversified, number one, and they're overly leveraged to the euro, obviously. Their currency's there. Their whole economic scheme is in the euro. Now, I thought it was really interesting when I read this piece because I start to really think about what's happening here. You know, we've seen an unbelievable amount of, I guess it would be called saving of the euro, buying, trying to reduce down currencies outside of there. And the euro is, in our opinion, very overvalued for where it should be right now. From an economy that's in a recession and a very steep recession, the euro is still holding on to a level that seems absurd. Where should it be? I don't know. 118, 117, par with the dollar? I mean, it's at a relative low to the yen, but yet we still seem to have a very high level of the euro compared to where it should be against the dollar. Interesting. In fact, we've seen this really odd movement that when they talk about buying bonds and doing things that are going to be spending money, the euro goes up. Whereas if we did something like that, the dollar would go down dramatically. Very strange currency environment right now. One of the things we've also seen recently is that we saw that amazing rally that happened after the whole concept of, hey, we're going to go in and directly buy bonds. There's been some discussion that has been saying, hey, we're not going to do that. The variety of German finance ministers are like, hey, wait a minute, this is not going to happen. You cannot go around the ESM, the ESFF, the EFSF, and you cannot do an end run through the ECB. It's just not allowed. We're not going to let this happen. So we'll see how that plays out and what kind of, you know, stopgap we get from the various, you know, ministers in the ECB and the various players out there. But, you know, it stinks to high hell of just talking with no backup. And let's get something straight. Let's get something very, very clear right here. As an investor, you cannot hang your hat on anything they say in Europe, whether it's good or bad. Whether it's positive for the currency and for the economy, or it's bad for the currency or the economy. Whether it's something that they promise, they write down, or they even, frankly, write in cement. There is nothing that I can find that you can trust there, because they are doing their best just to save their life. And let's think about this for a second. What would you do to save your life? What would you do? What lengths would you go to save your family's life? I mean, pretty much, you know, you wouldn't stop at anything, right? Well, that's what they're doing. Their political careers, their country's entire economy, the overall breakup of the euro itself, it just gets worse and worse. Greece is now, they're questioning whether they're going to give the next monies to Greece because they can't meet their targets. We've already seen, once again, Spain and Italy's bond yields are ticking up. And I'll tell you something, there's going to be a point where we have the ECB that cries wolf. That unless they actually come up with something that is written, it is in place, and it is activated soon, nobody's going to believe anything they say. And there's no reason for anybody to believe what they say. And we talked about that before with many people. We've talked about that with DAS so many times. You know, it's just the fact is that they just they can't get out of their way. There's too many cooks in the ECB right now, in the entire region, that are just saying opposite things. Kind of like what's happening here in a way. You know, you got the Fed. Some guy comes out last week and says, hey, you know what? We should have an open-ended operation. And I'm thinking, what does that mean? Open-ended? What does that mean, that we just have bond buying and quantitative easing without any limits at all? No, just nothing. Just in other words, coming out and stating, we're going to have an open-ended policy that we're just going to continue to buy bonds, no matter how bad or good this is, no matter how advantageous this is for the economy, or if it actually does anything for unemployment. But we're going to do this because we think if we do that, we can have a much more powerful situation, and you have what's called the Bernanke put, which puts a put under all situations, because if the economy gets bad, and let's say the economy gets really bad, things get really out of hand, GDP goes negative, recession, all this, and they have this open-ended QE, well, nobody gets nervous, right? You know, the David Tepper rally we talk about from a year ago or so. The economy gets bad, they do QE. The economy's good, hey, that's great. So there's no bad in this. But again, you know, once again, we get back to the situation is, you know, how long can this kind of charade go on? And is there ever going to be a point that we're going to pay off the debt? Now, let's get back to what we first started our discussion with today. Paul Ryan, friend or foe of the Fed? Interesting. We're probably going to have a very big discussion coming up about how Paul Ryan views the spending and the buying of bonds by the Fed. Because there's been some indication already from discussions he's had that maybe he's not totally enamored with the way that our economics is played right now with the Fed involved. And is he going to put some constraints on the discussion? Now, obviously, you know, we have to look at the Congress and the various areas. And if he becomes vice president, if Romney becomes president, a lot of moving parts here. But yet, at the same time, there's a little bit of a question being raised here, a little bit of a wrench in the engine, in the works. So I find that to be a very interesting dynamic that's probably going to play out over the next several months. And as we're talking about economics, let's kind of do a little quick playbook of what's going to be happening next week, aside from some of the earnings numbers that came out. And by the way, I want to talk about JCPenney for a second after we talk about these economics. But before we do that, let's just mention GoToMeeting. And we do have a webinar coming up, I think it's next week, on trigger points. And we're going to use GoToMeeting, same company, great stuff. And we're going to actually show live trading setups, if you will, and bring together the market trend indicator. And we do this, and it's so well done through the technology of GoToMeeting. It's by Citrix. And you simply, it's so easy. You just sign in to the webinar, for example, if you wanted to hold one or we're going to hold one. And you go to GoToMeeting and you can do it from iPad, you can do it from computer, Mac, you can do it from PC, whatever you want. And then you can just share the information that you're working on, whether it's a PowerPoint presentation, your screen, some kind of collaborative effort that you're working on. And actually, you can see people eye to eye if you're doing the presentation, if you want to, with your family, friends, or with a colleague. And you could simply go and get a free 30 days at GoToMeeting.com, click on the Try It Free button, and use the promo code PODCAST. You have to use that promo code PODCAST. And you get 30 free days of GoToMeeting. I encourage you to check it out. We love them. We think they're great, and that's why we use them for our webinars and our meetings for our clients and for these webinars. But there'll be more on those webinars. If you want to do it, check out triggerpointresearch.com. So let's talk about the economics, then we're going to talk about JCPenney, okay? All right, first, last week was a very light week of economics, which was good. When you don't have a lot of economics out there, markets don't get upset about it, they don't get positive about it, so you can get some kind of clean run on what's actually happening. That's good. Next week, we have more coming up starting on Tuesday. We got the producer price index, which I find very interesting how it's falling so dramatically in certain areas, of course. Now, this one may be a little bit hotter, but I don't think it's going to be too far off. Year over year, they're expecting about a 2.3% run. Not bad. 2.3% is not bad. CPI, you know, is coming in about those levels, 2.2%. That's ex-energy. We have that coming up the following day. We have the advanced retail sales, which is going to be important to watch. The prior was a negative 0.5%. That was last month. They're looking for about a plus 3, about plus 3%. There's some discussion already going on that there's some indication that the back-to-school season is not going to be as good as anticipated. People, you know, have been kind of worried a little bit about their financial future. We see that in the consumer confidence number, which, by the way, we're going to have the August preliminary of the University of Michigan on Friday, looking for about a 72. That would be the lowest in several, many months, actually. Last month's came in at 72.3. We have the Philadelphia Fed also coming in on Thursday. We have housing starts, which will be important. Initial claims, of course, will be important. But there's a few other things that you have to be watching for. Industrial production, capacity utilization, these are all on Wednesday. Housing starts Thursday. And you're going to see the big issue that will be focused on besides retail sales is going to be the PPI and the CPI, because that's going to be a tell to find out how much inflation is really hitting the markets or the economy underlying it and what effect we've really had on it from the various economic stimulus plans that have gone on. Now, it's really interesting that we've seen such little inflation, don't you think? I mean, with all this money being flooded into the markets, how come there's not inflation? That's because the money has filled up holes. It's just not, we talked about this, as a matter of fact, about a month ago. We talked about the velocity of money. And if you haven't read that, You have to read that piece we put out. I'll try to link that. I'm going to put that down in my notes here. I'm going to write the velocity of money here. You need to read this piece that we put out at the end of last quarter on the velocity of money and why we're not seeing inflation and why the money that is being spent and utilized by the Fed and various stimulus packages is not hitting inflation, nor is it really doing anything to expand the economy. All about the velocity of money. I want you to remember that. But what it is doing is creating a potential problem when it comes to oil, when it comes to food prices, which has been a real area of concern. We talked last week about the whole idea of corn. We talked about wheat and soybeans and the pricing and the crop report that was going to come out. Now, let me give you a follow-up of what happened there. And then we will get to JCPenney. What happened last week on Friday was that the crop report came out and it was pretty negative. Corn prices were expected to go higher, and clearly we're seeing that amount of corn that's available for use has, you know, really been drawn down, and the expectations have been dropped by the USDA. We knew that going in there was a big problem with corn, whether it's because of the ethanol usage or whether it's because of the poor conditions and the drought. It's a real problem. And we know that's also affecting feed pricing. As corn pricing goes up, it's affecting feed pricing. We've seen that from companies. We know that's affecting restaurants because they had to pay a higher price for their various food components. We saw that happen clearly with the pricing and the outlook by Chipotle, CMG, right? They came out with a discussion on how, you know, that's really hurting them. And also we saw the same thing with Buffalo Wild Wings, which doesn't seem to have affected that stock too badly yet, but I think the worst is still to come. Now, we told you last week, we mentioned that, hey, you know what? I said, there's three stocks I want you to look at. I want you to look at Sanderson Farms, SAFM. I want you to look at Tyson Foods, and I want you to look at a PPC. Now, all three of these are poultry providers. They're farming companies. They're the places that go out, and they'll actually, they will have the chickens, poultry for sale. They'll then bring them to, some of them bring them to manufacturing facilities. Some will do it themselves, and then they will actually, you know, output those. And when you're seeing such high input costs for corn and the feed, and what's happening is it's squishing their margins pretty roughly, pretty nasty situation. But I said keep a look on these three because I think there's, if you look at the chart, which is again, you know, this kind of this giant slope down. We wrote about this also, I think, on last Monday or Tuesday. This giant black diamond slope down, and you know, how much worse can it get? I mean, okay, that was the theory. Where are we going to go with this? I think that investors have priced in some really horrendous conditions already. And if that crop report comes out, you know, pretty negative, but not as negative as you would expect, corn prices could tumble dramatically. I talked about this last week. I wrote about this last week. Now, hopefully you hopped on the train on this one. So here's what happened. So the corn report comes out. The corn price spikes in the pre-market or early part of the day about 4% and then starts kind of creeping down throughout the day. Actually ended down about 1.5% or so on Friday, so that was about a 5% move from top to bottom. Well, Sanderson Farms and Tyson Foods and PPC, had they been moving already for the last week, if you look at that nice move they had off their bottom and basing position, and they moved up pretty well. And on this, you'll see a direct correlation to the price of corn and the movement of these stocks. Now, Sanderson Farms now starts to pop out of its range, and we're starting to see very close move of the other two as well. But Sanderson is the one we've been focusing on. They have earnings coming out the 24th, so in about two weeks. And the question is going to be, when we saw Tyson come out with a 4-cent miss and a drop in their revenue and an outlook that was pretty poor, the stock goes down 7%, but then turns around the next day and flies up and then moves again the rest of the week. Is there the potential that these stocks are so overdone that they have been pretty much pricing in corn going to, I mean, you know, another 25% higher? Because remember, they'll find other ways to get their, they'll do one of two things. They'll find other ways to get the feed, or what they'll do is raise prices, which is our concern for some restaurants, and which has been the concern expressed by restaurants. They're already raising prices, but Tyson even talked about, hey, we are going to be raising prices. And if they do so, what's going to happen with the overall, you know, what's the overall long-term situation there, where you see that you're going to have a pricing structure of the companies raising their prices, and if corn either goes up or stabilizes, you're going to have a much better overall margin. That's going to be something that we really should be looking at and thinking about this rather than getting too upset by the overall kind of chart pattern, even though it's been pretty rough. That's something I want you to look at. So again, sometimes when the worst is embedded in a stock price or a stock market for that matter, but a worst is embedded in, the question is, where do you have to go from there? So right now, again, these stocks are very vulnerable, but something worth looking at and then tracking corn price to see where they actually go. And, you know, what we did see was the peaking out and almost a, I guess you can call the last move on corn an exhaustive move on the upside. You know, where are we going to go from here? Unless we see some other really bad numbers, and already we're coming in with milder numbers and milder outlook for the whole Midwest area over the last 2 weeks. We've seen a little bit of a let up, a little bit more rain, a little bit cooler weather, etc. So if we do see that start to occur, where do these stocks go? They've been brutalized. So anyway, just talking about that. Now let's talk about JCPenney, because JCPenney has kind of been, oh, we love JCPenney. All these guys are coming out, these big wig money managers and mutual fund guys and hedge fund. Oh, boy, Johnson, Ron Johnson is just fantastic. He's from Apple. He's turning it around. But yet, horrendous results. Horrendous. It's kind of like, you know, the old story of the what is it called now? The new King's New Clothes? What are we, yeah, the King's New Clothes, right? Where he walks around naked, everybody says how beautiful it is. That doesn't seem right. Anyway, the Emperor's New Clothes, that's what it is. So what you have here is a situation where we have the Emperor's New Clothes, and they're very fitting for JCPenney, I suppose. They come out with a new idea on how they're going to rebrand. They come out with a new idea what they're going to do with the stores, a one-price thing and all that. Doesn't work. Okay, fine. We're going to come up with new ideas. We're going to fire this guy that's ahead of this, and Johnson's going to take over the marketing and that part and all that. Okay, and it comes out with numbers, and horrible. Stock goes down about 5% pre-market on the earnings number, and then turns around, it's up, I don't know, 6% that day. Struggling, but up 6%. And you got to wonder what it is that is such an attractive situation with Ron Johnson. Seems to be just mesmerizing. Matter of fact, there was a few articles about how he's kind of hypnotized everybody into believing there's going to be some great thing because it's from Apple. And I question whether he can really port the information and the store design and the whole idea of his brilliance and the Genius Bar and the retail stores of Apple over to JCPenney. It seems to be a bit of a far reach here. Now, it's possible, but yet JCPenney, I mean, you wonder, what's the buzz? What are they going to come up with? Have you seen their recent commercials? You don't even know what's going on. Kids on swings and you got playing by a beach and great. But it doesn't tell me anything new. It doesn't tell me anything exciting. Is it going to be a sale? Are you going to do something better that way? What is it as a consumer that I want to be a part of when it comes to JCPenney? Now, it's not going to be technology. It's not, you know, they need to do something dramatic, like, you know, shrinkage of stores, of the stores that are out there. They need to do some kind of major money saving and margin improvement. And again, what we're seeing is a lot of hope trade going on. It's kind of like what happened with Netflix not too long ago. The hope trade that, you know what, Netflix is down and it's going to get better. And, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, we kind of get really bad numbers and then it falls off a cliff and it gets to a new low from the last few years. Now, this is a little bit different than the same discussion we just had or a similar discussion we just had a minute ago about poultry prices. The difference is that when you look at what the worst is priced in and you know your parameters of what it is, I mean, it's input prices and it's output. People have to eat. They have to, and they do eat chicken and all, and there's not that many potential places to get it from, but yet at the same time, they don't have to buy clothes from that place, right? It's different. And it's a whole different dynamic. It's a question of the buzz over what you're going to buy and where you're going to buy it versus what you know you have to buy, essentially, and the pricing structure and margins. There's a much different parameter going on here. So when you look at this, and I still wonder what it is that people are so excited about. If you have something that you think is so exciting about JCPenney, can you do me a favor and send it in to me? Can you let me know what is the big excitement over JCPenney? Now, again, you look at the chart and you say, well, I don't see any excitement. In fact, I don't see any excitement. It looks terrible, the chart. But again, why are they bidding up this stock here? Was it just a short cover, short squeeze? What, you know, what's going on here? Why they keep saying it's one of the best ideas they've had in ages? one of the single best ideas they've had. This is kind of the discussion that, you know, you hear a lot of times about JCPenney. At the same time, you're seeing a lot of the companies that are involved in the clothing, you know, just really have a hard time right now. I don't think there's, I'm trying to think if there's one. I can't think of one off the top of my head that has been, you know, clearly in the apparel area, that has been saying how things are going to be much better and they're seeing a much better outlook. Some of the companies like the big box retailers, the other alternatives to JCPenney, have been, you know, holding up pretty well. Kohl's, Nordstrom's didn't look so good. Macy's, not thrilling. But yet they're holding up. You know, it's been like kind of alternative smaller guys that have been really getting squashed or really doing well, depending on if they're in style and vogue. True Religion falls off a cliff. Aeropostale just gets just obliterated. Abercrombie, there's still some hope for. So, you know, Zumiez was doing well for a while. Then it dropped and kind of a little bit down. You know, you're kind of seeing a tale of many different scenarios, again, dependent on where the excitement is. You look at things like Fossil came up 35% last week because, you know, people thought the end is near for these guys. But the high end started to, you know, claw back a little bit recently. Tiffany, we saw Coach looked okay in terms of their earnings, again, with, you know, coming in after the analysts lowered their guidance pretty significantly. So, anyway, lots talking about there. Let's also mention, there's another thing I want to mention here. What was it that I wanted to mention? Ah, yes. Vera Bradley, symbol VRA. Take a look at that one. That's kind of approaching a breakout scenario there. It's a kind of a low float investment out there. It's starting to come back. They have earnings coming up. It could be, if they hit earnings, I want you to look at this one because it could really pop pretty well. It has some support underneath the levels they have here, but Vera Bradley is something to take an interest in and take a look at. We posted some Trigger Point research information. Go over there at triggerpointresearch.com. We have the statistics over the last couple of weeks on the various trades. It's available to everybody. There's a 14-day free trial. You know about that. But I do want to mention also that if you're interested in investing and some of the things we talk about here, you know, it's something that is a matter of taste. We have an aggressive strategy that you know about. I think you know about. Go over to thedisciplinedinvestor.com. There's a little link there. There's a 12, 13-minute virtual tour that you can take a look at and find out more information about how we actually manage money and actually how we can do it for you. There's a $50,000 minimum for that, $500,000 minimum for our other strategies, which are more global allocations. But I do want you to at least take a look at that and find out if it's something that you want to do or not. We won't spend too much time on this discussion. But if, you know, it's kind of like if what we talk about here makes sense, well, maybe that's something that you should investigate a little bit further. So check that out. Also, I'll mention to you that we will have some information on the website this week about the webinars coming up. So if you haven't had an opportunity to do that, and there's some webinar replays that are also available from the ones we've done in the past. So kind of coming into the end of August and looking at where we're going from here right now, I will tell you that, you know, we have a scenario where we have a bit of a Goldilocks scenario where, you know, it's not too hot, not too cold. Amazing that we've gotten this far recently. A lot of it is due to the underpinnings of central banks and stimulus, et cetera. So, you know, be aware of that, but also be aware that, you know, food costs are rising. Watch the restaurants. Watch the, you know, you saw what happened at McDonald's recently. Watch the companies that have a lot of, you know, levels of access and revenues that are coming from Europe. You see what happened last week with the credit card providers, a couple of big ones out there, but the one with a great deal of exposure to Europe in terms of processing is Verifone. PAY is a symbol. Take a look at that chart. You'll notice that since May, they've really been coming down. Last week, they got just smoked. So, I mean, they're down probably, I don't know, close to 40% from about high of 55 to about 35 recently. So, you know, it's a pretty big number when it comes to the fact that, you know, we know that there's a lot of exposure to Europe that's hurting companies right now, and it's going to kind of spread a little bit, and it's hurting countries also, and that's why we saw that big export disappointment from China. So keep that in mind. We'll talk a lot more about that coming up shortly. We have Tom McClellan that's going to be coming up on the podcast soon. I got a couple other guys that we're trying to get Doug Cass on board. I want to talk about some of his recent calls and his concept of, you know, looking at the greatest opportunity and That's shorting the long bond. We'll see if that is something we can put together for you soon. And thank you to Scott Patterson for that great discussion last week about, you know, we talked about the trading, and we went back and forth with him, as a matter of fact, recently, and kind of tried to see if there's any pattern that we could figure out. It's still a bit of a mystery. But he's from the Wall Street Journal, talked about dark pools, and there's a great book out there. So definitely check that out. We're going to end it here this week, a little bit short. It's the summer. We'll kind of take it a little bit easy. And please do me a favor, please send me your favorite Twitterers. Go to the show notes from this week. Click on that. It's on the website. It's also at the top of the post. There's a couple of forms, a little form you fill out. And just, you know, says who's your favorite tweeter, what's their handle. And that would be really great. I'd really appreciate the help on that, okay? And, of course, get your 14-day free trial of Trigger Point Research. You get the alerts, the full version, whether it's text or email alerts, right delivered to you as they happen, free for 14 days. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you again next week. Andrew Horowitz. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented it should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.